Tour of the galactic spiral arm, we came upon this structure. It is a ring mind. The ring mind has long been seen as a possible megastructure, an assemblage of complex, organized matter larger than a planet. A ring mind is not a rigid artifact like other megastructures, but a moving, dynamic assembly of millions of simple, solid objects that interact through collisions and gravity in order to generate intelligent behavior. The first ring mind was discovered just over a century ago, but this is the first example that we've found on our own tour. It appears to be an old, abandoned ring mind. We are still trying to discover whether it was an artificial construct or spontaneously emerged, who, if anyone, made it, and why, and what it is doing. A ring mind is the structure that can form around a giant planet within its gravity well, the region in which objects are gravitationally attracted towards the planet. At the center of the gravity well forms a planet which breaks the symmetry of space within the originary cloud, creating a vertical direction for other particles of rock and ice and gas to fall together. And in the outer zone of the gravity well, where tidal forces are weak, moons are able to form and can grow large enough to make themselves spherical and interact with each other and arrange themselves into stable orbits. But in the inner zone, close to the planet, tidal forces and shear prevent particles from coagulating. Instead, here, planets form a ring of millions of individual small particles. And the first condition of the emergence of a ring mind is this triple splitting of being against itself into the One, a giant planet, a local god to create and maintain the gravity well, a meeting place for all. Second, the many, the particles and moonlets that fill the inner zone with the law of large numbers, the chatter and motion and swarm of self-assembly. And third, the several, the large moons, intermediate in size and number between planet and ring particles that patrol the outer zone and stir the inner zone with their gravitational paddles. With any ring mind, there are a number of ways it could have come about. A sentient being might have found an existing ring system and tended and nurtured it into sentience. Or they may have found a suitable planet without a ring and thrown a large body, a moon or a comet, into the inner zone of its gravity well and let it get pulled apart and ground down into millions of particles. Or they may have manufactured ring particles with particular properties and thrown them into the inner zone. Or maybe a ring mind could have emerged spontaneously without external help. Whichever is the case, the ring mind will have started as a cloud of objects that through their interactions have composed themselves over time into a we, a swarm that will ready themselves to carry out operations. Indeed, the cloud turning itself into a disk is already engaged in swarmy thought as the particles trade their momentum, resulting in the flat circular disk that is the heart of the ring mind. And the way the form emerges and endures in a ring is so different from the way that it does on the condensed body of a rocky planet. Planets fall into being as spheres. Rings fall into being as flat disks. A planet divides itself into assemblies of air and rock and water and organisms. A ring comes together as one shifting assembly. A planet is continuous matter, a ring discontinuous. Are we moving in the void? A planet sits at the center and bottom of a gravity well, the ring around its edge, open to interplanetary space. By turning from a cloud to a swarm, by making a flat ring, the assemblage has also crafted orbital space, further creating the preconditions for a ring mind. All the objects of the ring are in rapid motion in relation to the planet, moving at maybe thousands of kilometers per hour. And they're also moving in relation to each other. Objects in different orbits have to move at a particular speed to stay in their orbit, with objects close to the central body moving faster than those further away. In a way, the ring at equilibrium is still. The form that stillness takes in the orbital realm is this constant relative motion. This motion is an orbital crystal, but unlike a solid crystal in which maintaining the lowest energy state involves staying still, in orbit the crystalline form involves performing the duty of correct orbital motion, the obligation to move in the appropriate way. Space and motion in the orbital realm is non-Euclidean, even phenomenological. To experience space and force and speed and distance as an orbiting body does, one needs to inhabit an angular and moving frame of reference. For an orbiting particle, each direction in space is different. Or to be exact, planetward and spaceward look the same. Either way, the further you look away, the faster the particles are going to the side. And in these directions, near and far work differently. The further you look away, the more familiar the ringscape will appear, as it's the furthest objects that you will see most frequently as you catch up with them again in your respective courses around the planet. But the closest particles will be moving so imperceptibly compared with to you that you may only lap them every 100,000 years. And spinward and counter-spinward look the same, with other particles either side drifting past in opposite directions. And if you are an embedded moonlet, large enough to disrupt the particles around you as you pass, it will be like putting your hands into a quiet pool full of life. You will make the particles around you shift from circular to elliptical orbits. Suddenly, collisions will start to proliferate as particles cross paths and hit each other, knocking each other into new directions, swapping energy and information. And you will see half of your wake in front of you as the faster particles carry the effect of your presence forward, and half of it behind you as the slower particles fall backwards and carry their disturbance with them. And this is why the bodies of organic beings that evolve in the orbital realm have rotational rather than reflectional symmetry. These beings face half one way and half the other, and they think of time and cause and effect as traveling in two directions at once. And gravity too seems to work differently in this moving, shifting world. It can seem to repel as well as attract, as the pull of one body will speed up or slow down another and make them shift orbits and speed. And bodies can seem to orbit points in empty space or travel in waves. And fast and slow also work differently. The particles in larger orbits, further away from the planet, are moving slower than you, but have far more energy. And there are forms of liquidity in the orbital realm, laminar and turbulent flow, streamlines, viscosity. And all of these features of the orbital realm help to make the ring mind such a distinctive phenomenon. Other megastructures that we found on our tour have used the light of stars as the source of energy for their work. But ring mines are different because they're powered not by electromagnetism, but mechanically, using kinetic and gravitational energy, which is slowly released over the lifetime of the ring mind. We think this form of self-organizing matter may be favored in older galaxies where the stars are going out and matter has to find other ways to sustain its various kinds of liveliness and to process and manipulate information. When the cloud turned itself into a disk, it was falling in the specific way that a ring falls into being, composing itself not into a rigid sphere, but a discontinuous disk, as thin and as circular as it could in order to reduce the number of collisions to a minimum. But the order and quietness and fall and thinness of the ring is deceptive. When we listen to the spectrum of the ring, the spread of tones from high to low, we hear the distribution of energy and intensity between events that are quick and short and common and those that are slow and long and rare. Listen to the spectrum. Analyze its composition. You are not hearing a heartbeat, but you can hear the machinic signature of self-organization. Like organic life, the sound of our rings exhibits the power law of pink noise, where power is inversely proportional to frequency. The ring has been tuned by chance or design to self-organize and self-organizing criticality, poised between the black noise of changeless order and the white noise of chaos. The ring is available to self-organize. It still has a huge store of energy. Maybe half of its initial energy of motion was dissipated as it prepared the ring. But the other half of the energy was not only preserved, but made available by the structuring of orbital space. The ring is in dynamic equilibrium, poised, sprung, ready for work, ready to access that energy gradually over thousands and millions of years to create emergent order. The small moonlets embedded in and generated by the rings play a crucial role in accessing that energy by perturbing the circular orbits and creating the possibility, the control possibility of collisions. But also crucial for the ring mind are the several, the large outer moons. Within the well provided by the planet, the place of meeting where time takes place, although the moons and rings, the several and the many, are in different zones and in different modes of existence, there is trading between the two. The moons know the rings and the rings know the moons. This trading goes on at a distance. Each time they pass each other, a little tug is applied. The outer moons lock themselves into a clockwork dance of Laplace resonances based on simple integer ratios. And they use other resonances between their habitual trajectories and the orbits of the particles to selectively gather the many into density waves and gaps and wakes and lobes. And at the boundary between the outer and inner parts of the gravity well, there's a special trading zone between the moons and the rings, where not just the motion, but the matter of the rings and moons can be exchanged as ring particles coalesce into moons and moons break up into rings. But if a ring can tune itself by crafting orbital space to make it possible to slowly access its store of kinetic energy, it can also be tuned in other ways. It can tune the size and shape of its gravity well, the positions and mass of its outer moons, the number and size and mass and shape of the particles in the ring, and in the particles' collisional properties. Will they bounce off each other? Will they deform? Will they stick together? Can they create aggregates in complex shapes that will affect how they can interact? Can they form into larger permanent or semi-permanent moons? To realize the potential of the ring for sentience, all these parameters can be adjusted by an outside agent or by the ring itself. When a ring mind thinks, it thinks without a fixed architecture, with no wires or neurons or other structure. Its logic gates and synapses have to be created and dissolved and recreated on the fly. But to think, you need to remember, but also to forget, to make space for new thoughts. Here, the triemption of matter into planet, moons, and rings is crucial. For the system has long memory in the centrality of the one, the planet, and the stable orbits of the several, the large outer moons. But the planet and the moons in their movement are hypermnesic. They remember too much. They lack the power to forget, to change their mind. And the many, the particles that make up the ring that are small in mass but large in number, either by themselves hypomnesic, too forgetful, too quick to swerve in the Kleinemann of Lucretius. They swarm, obeying simple rules, they interact, create flocks and herds that form and dissolve. But taken as a whole, the ring mind can perform memory techniques, with each component of the triune system borrowing the powers of the other, trading the habitual memory of the one and the several for the form-creating liquid power of the surging many. At orbital rest, each of the many are in their crystalline motion, held away from collisions with each other. They're in the zero of a circular orbit. But the moons can pull the particles from this state into an elliptical orbit from zero to one. And if they're pulled out of the main body of the ring, the many continue their elliptical arc. But as soon as they re-enter the dense ring body, the power of the swarm takes hold and collisions with the other particles reset them, knocking them back to the zero of their original circular trajectory. And with this fading memory, they make themselves available for thought. So the several moons can thus write into the many, enabling them to create new forms and remember. And at the outer edge of the ring, swarms of particles confuse together on the edge between the inner and the outer zone of the gravity well, and themselves become moons that can start to shape the ring dynamics. And we know from the ring minds that have been studied so far that they can evolve and complexify both their internal dynamics and their relationship with their environment. Xenotechnologists say that there are four basic kinds of ring mind, each of which maintains the dynamics of the prior types, but adds a new complexity and recursion, rather like our own bodily prostheses, like the one I'm holding in my hands, extend the powers of our frontal cortices, which in turn are dependent on ancient brain structures. The first type of ring mind is termed a type zero ring mind. This is the cloud that is in the act of composing itself into a ring. Its particles are collectively solving a problem by following a simple algorithm. By trading momentum through collisions and gravity, the nascent ring mind calculates the direction and speed of the total angular velocity of the cloud and creates a disk rotating in a plane and direction and angular speed that indicates the result of the calculation. But the type one ring mind is different. This is the class that includes all thin planetary rings that perform the task of outputting their own motion. A type one ring mind is an analog computer that calculates itself, one that is its own input, processor, and output. The planet and the moons, the one, the several, give it a puzzle to solve, but without knowing it, it is its own puzzle, its own task, continually calculating how its component parts should move by weighing the forces and moving its substance as the solution. And then a type two ring mind is a symbiosis between a ring mind and another life form that has recognized that a ring of a billion particles that interact in non-linear ways is capable of parallel computation on a massive scale. This type of ring mind has been supplemented with inputs and outputs, with ways of presenting the ring mind with a problem or a question and of extracting the solution. Thus, on top of the task that is its own being, its own duration, the task of calculating its own motion, has been laid another task by an outside agent. And finally, the type three ring mind is different again. It is an entity that has become aware that it has been given a task and has thereby become a subject in and for itself. It has outgrown the task it has been given and has given itself a new task. And it has also recognized that the task that it is of computing its own motion is also a task and starts to change it. It learns how to control and optimize the flow of kinetic energy through itself. It generates swarms and moonlets around its edge that optimize the rate at which circular orbits are perturbed and collisions occur. It uses the gravitational interaction between moons to move them around to where it needs them, to be able to finish a thought or a calculation. And it uses tidal and shear forces and ballistic collisions to break moons apart and recycle the particles. By such a process, in moving from firstness to secondness to thirdness, it has become a full-blown ring mind, a thinking swarm of particles with a lifespan of millions of years. The ring mind that we've discovered now appears to be dormant. Is it sleeping? Is it still alive? Its size and complexity suggests that it was once a type three ring mind, but we cannot be sure of what it was capable or what it ever knew or how aware it is now. and neither do we know the syntax it was given by its creators, if creators there were, or how it might have altered this syntax or have developed its own ways of representing its own mental states and its environment. But let us see if we can wake it from its slumber. Let us pose it a question in an arrangement of particles and see whether and how it responds. Ring mind, what kinds of things can become a we? I have a few other people to thank, actually. Although I was the external agent that had the privilege of provoking the ring mind into sentience, I should also thank Thomas Kahn and Sam Hinson, and the other members of the team behind the show, as it were. So, who were responsible for the physics simulation. So, Thomas and Sam. And also Tony Doyle for sound design and spatial audio. And Ashley James Brown for the visualizations. Thank you. Thanks a lot.